It's time now for America in the Balance. Brought to you by Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. And now your co-hosts, Amanda Teagarden and James Parsons.
And welcome, freedom-loving Oklahomans, to another hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Amanda Teagarden, in studio with James Parsons, and we're both of OK Safe. That's Oklahomans for Sovereignty and Free Enterprise. Our website is ok-safe.com. That's ok-safe.com. Lots of good information. For our regular listeners, you know that the state of Oklahoma is in the midst of implementing, which we can hardly believe, Obamacare, or the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, certain provisions of that. We have a lot of information on our front page, which are source documents of the grants, the planning grant that the state took in 2010, and the $54 million Early Innovator Grant, the Early Innovator Grant that Oklahoma's Governor Mary Fallon accepted in February of 2011. The Oklahoma legislature is in session right now, and as you know, we encourage citizen involvement in the legislative process, and we are happy to report that one piece of enabling piece of legislation, James, which was House Bill 2130, was successfully stalled in our Oklahoma legislature on the Senate side, which is a big surprise.
Right, but our fear is that actually this could be a diversionary tactic, and that they could be using that bill in some other fashion, so to kind of cover up what they're doing. Do you want to explain that a little bit, what went on this week?
Well, what happened this week, and we do have a very special guest today, Michael F. Cannon of the Cato Institute, and we will get to him in just about 1 minute. What happened this week was the Senate was made an announcement, a press release, surprise press release, saying that the Senate Pro Tem Brian Bingaman said we will not be passing House Bill 2130. This was creating a governing hub, a board. The Secretary of Health and Human Services would be the executive director of this board, which would be made up of special interest groups, appointed special interest groups that would oversee the implementation of the insurance exchange in the state of Oklahoma. There are no other alternatives, although now that the Senate has stalled this bill, the next step is to, we're going to not do that one, we're going to take language that we like and attach it to another bill and create an Oklahoma-based free market or market-based exchange. When we ask, what's the template, where's the computer diagram, they do not have one. So we're going to create something that they don't have a template for. So there's our quandary. We're still asking people to be in contact with their state senator and their state representative to oppose any implementation of an exchange in Oklahoma.
And then that ultimately brings us to who we have today on our show, being Michael Cannon from the Cato Institute, a personal fan of mine.
No, you're a fan of his.
I mean, that's right. I'm a fan of his.
Both can be true.
Both can be true. All right. Michael F. Cannon is the Cato Institute's Director of Health Policy Studies. Previously, he served as a domestic policy analyst for the U.S. Senate Republican Policy Committee under Chairman Larry E. Craig, where he advised the Senate leadership on health, education, labor, welfare, and the Second Amendment. Second Amendment, by the way, Michael, is very popular in the state of Oklahoma. He has appeared on ABC, CBS, CNN, CNBC, C-SPAN, Fox News, and NPR.
But most notably, American in the Balance.
And yes, now you've hit the peak here. Anyway, we are very grateful to have you here. The reason we called you and asked you to be on our show is because you've written a very helpful article, and it's called Obamacare Can't Be Fixed, and Now is the Time to Dismantle It. And we handed this article out at the Oklahoma Capitol, so we were very grateful for it. It was our rebuttal to the Heritage Foundation documents that were being handed out at the Capitol. Michael, thank you, and welcome to America in the Balance.
Thank you for having me. For listeners who are interested, that article can be found in the March 2021 issue of National Review magazine.
All right, and it's available on Cato.org website.
Yes, it's also available at our website, www.cato.org, C-A-T-O.org.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Well, We briefed you just a little bit before we started today's show, and we mentioned that the state of Oklahoma has recently accepted a $54 million early innovator grant to create the IT infrastructure for the exchanges, the technological infrastructure for the exchanges. And we discussed earlier about how we were going to approach this and what we're going to ask you. There are a couple of questions we do want to ask you. Is what is your definition of an exchange to begin with?
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to nail down, because I think a lot of people hear all this talk about technology infrastructures and health insurance exchanges, and it just sort of goes over their heads. So to be clear, a health insurance exchange as envisioned by, let's start with as it is envisioned by some conservatives, like our friends at the Heritage Foundation. It is an exchange, is a government bureaucracy that is supposed to serve as sort of an artificial marketplace where individuals can get the tax break that employers get for health insurance for a policy that they choose on their own. So if they're, insofar as conservatives like the Heritage Foundation are trying to give workers that freedom to choose their own health plan that they have right now, well, the motivation behind an exchange is certainly noble. But when you think about it in those terms, that state bureaucrats are going to somehow fix the federal tax code, you can instantly see a problem. Or two, really. One, state bureaucrats can't fix the federal tax code. That's not how it works. And the second one is that whenever you create a new government bureaucracy, that government bureaucracy is going to grow. The bureaucracy itself becomes a constituency that lobbies for more government, for more power. They owe their paychecks. They owe their power to government, so they have an interest in seeing government grow. And that's really what happened when the Heritage Foundation advised Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney to create an exchange in Massachusetts. In order to get the exchange passed, they had to expand government. And now that the exchange exists, its powers and the government in Massachusetts is expanding, and health insurance premiums and health care costs are rising along with it. As envisioned by envisioned by Obamacare, that's pretty much where the exchange starts, where Massachusetts left off with a very powerful regulatory bureaucracy that forces people to purchase health insurance, tells them what kind of health insurance they have to purchase, regulates the price of that insurance, and hands out hundreds of billions of dollars in government subsidies to private insurance companies that participate in the exchange. That's what this fight is about in state legislatures. Will these Obamacare exchanges, these government bureaucracies that are going to implement the law, that are going to implement the individual mandate that a broad majority of Americans want to repeal, including independents, this exchange is going to implement an individual mandate. It's going to tell people what kind of health insurance they have to purchase, making low-cost, economical health plans like those that accompany health savings accounts more expensive or unavailable. The exchanges are going to be the ones enforcing the price controls that Obamacare imposes on health insurance that are going to make the plans at the other end of the spectrum unavailable, the comprehensive plans that cover the most services. Because if you think about it, when the government imposes what are called community rating price controls on health insurance, you're going to have a lot of patients who cost $50,000 to insure, but they're paying far less, and yet they're the ones that are going to be purchasing the comprehensive plans. So those comprehensive plans are going to disappear. There's research by President Obama's own economic advisors that shows this is what happens. The exchange will be eliminating the comprehensive plans too, or implementing the rules that eliminate them. And then, again, there's the hundreds of billions of dollars of new government, I should mention, debt-financed government subsidies that are going to go to private insurance companies. The exchange is going to be doling out that money too. And so when the governor of Oklahoma and the governors of a number of other states decided to take this early innovator money, this is extra money that the federal government, Obamacare, made available to a small number of states so that those states could help the federal government figure out how to make these exchanges work, how to make these Obamacare bureaucracies work, so that they could be replicated in the other states. It's kind of startling that Oklahoma, which is a pretty conservative state, even took this money to begin with, because first of all, Oklahoma has joined a lawsuit that is trying to overturn this law as unconstitutional. So the state has taken a position that this law is unconstitutional, and yet it's taking money made available under this law to implement it. There's a fundamental contradiction there. And any elected official in Oklahoma that says they believe Obamacare is unconstitutional is violating their oath of office to protect the U.S. Constitution if they are also implementing the law. That goes from the governor down to every state legislator.
Well Michael, if I can stop you just for a second, you mentioned the Massachusetts model, but it seems like our state legislator and our governor are always going over to the Utah model and saying, well, we don't want to do the bad Massachusetts failing exchanges that's out there. We want to do what the right one, and that being Utah. Well, how is Utah different, and is that one really working at all?
The only difference between Utah and Massachusetts, the Utah exchange and the Massachusetts exchange, is a couple of years. After the Utah exchange was introduced, it got more and more regulatory. The price controls that were imposed on health insurance in Utah got tighter and tighter. They're still not as tight as it's in Massachusetts, but just give it time. The most important thing to recognize is that the Utah exchange right now is not what you would call Obamacare compliant, because it's not enforcing the individual mandate, eliminating the low-cost plans. It's not eliminating the comprehensive plans, and so it's not marching us into that narrow range of plan or one single plan that we're going to be able to, quote, choose from. It's not implementing the mandate. It's not implementing the price controls. It's not doling out all these subsidies. And so in 2014, when Obamacare is supposed to take full effect, the Utah exchange will either become an Obamacare exchange and become as bad as Massachusetts or worse, or it will be defunct, because no insurance policy that is not Obamacare compliant is going to be sold in the state of Utah or in any state. And so no insurance company is going to go anywhere near a non-Obamacare compliant exchange. So that's why when the Heritage Foundation goes around the country saying, well, we should create these health insurance exchanges that are not Obamacare compliant so that we can show them how a government bureaucracy is supposed to work, that's nonsense, because there's no such thing as a non-Obamacare compliant exchange. They're all going to become Obamacare exchanges with the mandates, the price controls, and the debt-financed government spending that are going to take effect. Health insurance premiums are going to go up in all of these exchanges. Choice is going to go down. Sick people are going to have a harder time getting the care that they need, because that is what these exchanges reward. So that's the problem with Utah. It's not an Obamacare exchange or a Massachusetts exchange yet, but it's going to be by 2014 unless we repeal this law.
I want to go back to something that you said, because you touched on one of the arguments that we're hearing here in Oklahoma. When the House was debating in favor of this bill on the floor, I heard two amazing things. I personally agree with you that it is contradictory that we have a lawsuit in play opposing the constitutionality, claiming it is unconstitutional. By the way, the lawsuit is only about the individual mandate. Is unconstitutional.
Actually, that is not true. The lawsuit is about more than just the individual mandate. It's about the Medicaid expansion as well. And I think there's a third claim, although that one is eluding me right now.
In Oklahoma?
Oklahoma joined the Florida lawsuit. Yes, the Florida lawsuit actually is attacking more than the individual mandate. And as Judge Vinson, the judge who ruled Obamacare unconstitutional in that case, wrote, he struck down the entire law because the individual mandate is an essential part of that law. It is an indispensable part of that law. So he declared the entire law unconstitutional and void. And as just parenthetically, I'll note, he said that that judge, Judge Vinson, allowed the Obama administration to keep implementing Obamacare. He rejected the plaintiff state's request that he tell the Obama administration to stop implementing Obamacare. And one of the reasons he gave is that states like Oklahoma are implementing this law themselves.
Which undermines
so
all of our arguments.
So the fact that state legislatures are implementing and governors are implementing this law, not only is it a contradiction, not only does it violate their oath of office, it even undercuts the lawsuit that they have brought against Obamacare.
That's what we were contending, because it sends a contradictory message. Now, the two things that were amazing that we heard on the House floor were these two arguments. Taking the grant money was like assuming the Heisman Trophy stance, in that it's both offense and defense.
Michael, if you see the Heisman Trophy, this is their explanation. In one hand, with the right hand, you're using that to push off the federal government, while with the left hand, you take the ball and you run with it. And that is kind of the example that they give to us.
Well, let me give you another image. The money is marionette strings, and it's being attached to all of these state legislators.
That's true.
The golden rule applies here. He who has the gold makes the rules. The federal government is handing out money to these states, and these states are not going to be able to use that money to keep the federal government at bay, to say we are going to do things the way we want to do them. They're going to have to do them the way the federal government says. And it's crucial to understand that when they create these exchanges, or even if they create a hub board that's going to say it's just going to study how these exchanges are created, that board is going to be, or that exchange is going to be packed with people who owe their paychecks to government and owe their power to government, and they're going to want more of both. So they are going to lobby to make sure that this exchange is up and running and ready to hand out its hundreds of billions of dollars of subsidies in 2014, so that they get millions of Americans hooked on these subsidies, and Obamacare becomes impossible to repeal. What these state legislators are doing is not giving the federal government the Heisman. They are entrenching this law. They're making it harder to do what they say they want to do, which is repeal it. And they're letting it take root. And here's something crucial to recognize. The people who are telling them to do this are not their constituents. It's not you. It's not their base voters, the people who go and work at polls. It's not the activists who vote in primaries. It's the insurance companies.
The insurance companies
under this law, they're the ones who get these hundreds of billions of dollars. They want those exchanges up and running so that when the Washington turns on the spigot, the money comes right to them. They're the ones who are pushing the governors and the legislators to do this. They're the ones in the legislators' offices. They're the ones saying that this can be done without undermining the lawsuits, which is untrue. This can be done without contradicting your previous position, which is untrue. We have to recognize that this is special interest pleading, which is contrary to the public interest. The public interest here would be served by blocking this law, undermining its implementation so that it'll be easier to repeal. But what the insurance companies are doing is the opposite of that. And that's where the push is coming from.
They have, that is exactly what's happening. And there's a steering committee that was created by executive order, by a law in 2009, because this has been coming progressively. So the hub, this board, was created in 2009, and the members of it were appointed by the then governor, Brad Henry. In December of 2010, Brad Henry's office submitted a request. Actually, it was the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority submitted the grant request for the Early Innovator Grant in December of 2010. By then, Mary Fallon was already elected. And it was under his administration that the grant was requested, but then it was received in February 2011. The other argument that we've heard, let me get back to that. What we're finding when we were trying to educate the legislators on what this was about, denial, denial, denial. They said the Heisman Trophy comment on the floor, and then the other comment on the floor by a legislator who absolutely happens to be an attorney said that aren't we pretty darn clever in Oklahoma to take this grant money and then do with it what we want? Besides the fraud issue that brings to mind, there is no doing what you want because the grant application and the state's response, it was a contract. And the contract had these stipulations in it. The stipulations were chapter and verse of Obamacare, the sections of the PPACA law that you were agreeing to implement in order to take the money. The state agreed. And to convince the legislators to read this contract was an uphill battle. And they kept saying, well, that's not the case. They were sticking to the talking points. Heritage Foundation, Massachusetts, Utah, consumer-driven, free market. Michael, I haven't seen free market in any of this. And yet those are the same talking points the public was told over and over again till we finally broke through and found one senator who would read the application and the state's response, and the light bulb went off. All of a sudden, wait a minute, there are huge strings attached, just like you said, the marionette strings. This is the battle. People are talking around what an exchange is without actually understanding what it is that they're agreeing to. It was clearly the provisions of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, by chapter, by verse, exactly, and to the federal standards. There's no other standard out there but the federal standard. Have you seen...
You know, the Heisman comment sounds to me like a politician who's caught taking bribes and then says, well, I wasn't really in their pockets. I was fooling those people who were bribing me.
And you're going to fool the federal government, right? Because when you send...
Even if you're right, you know what? It's still a bribe. You took a bribe. And of course, no one does or should believe the politician that says that. But here, let me tell you something that should really make every Oklahoma legislator who's pushing for this, who thinks they can implement a free market exchange, that should embarrass all of them. So far in the United States, you have four governors who have said, absolutely not, we're not going to be creating one of these Obamacare exchanges. Rick Scott of Florida, Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, Sean Parnell of Alaska, Rick Perry of Texas. These governors have said, we're not going to create an exchange. The law is going to increase the cost of health insurance. Forget about it. What's most interesting about that is the first two I mentioned, Rick Scott and Bobby Jindal, they know more about health care than any other governors in the country. Rick Scott used to run a chain of hospitals. Bobby Jindal has worked in a number of positions, both inside government and in the private sector, in the healthcare field. He was, you know, he's an expert in healthcare. It is his thing. It's his issue. And these two guys are the ones saying absolutely not to Obamacare. Rick Scott has sent, not only has he not accepted any Obamacare money because he knows that money is corrupting, he has sent back money that Obamacare that the federal government sent to his predecessor under Obamacare. Scott Walker in Wisconsin has sent money back. Other governors have sent money back. State legislators are now wising up to what's going on here and are pushing back against this momentum to create a health insurance exchange. In South Carolina, a number of Republicans were on a bill that would create an exchange. After they heard from their constituents, including some Tea Party members, 13 of the Republicans who were co-sponsoring that law backed off, including the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. In New Hampshire, they have this bizarre royal council sort of thing that has to sign off on all government contracts. It voted unanimously to reject a proposed contract to create a health insurance exchange. In North Dakota, they are fighting back against an exchange. In Montana, the legislature has said, forget it, we're not going to do this. And now the Democratic governor is trying, and insurance commissioner, who fears obsolescence, is trying to go around the legislature to create a bureaucracy without the legislature's authorization. There's also talk about that happening in Georgia, where Republican Governor Nathan Deal has had to pull his exchange bill because of the opposition it encountered in the legislature. And now the Republican insurance commissioner, who also fears being made obsolete by Obamacare and wants an exchange so that he'll have something to do, is also trying to go around the legislature and enact an exchange without the legislature's approval. So what you see here is consistent with what's going on in Oklahoma. Once people start reading about this and learning about what it means to take the money, what it means to create one of these exchanges, they say no way and they back off, because they realize there's a contradiction between the oath of office that they have taken and their stance on Obamacare, where they're suing to overturn it, but also also implementing it. They recognize that this is going to entrench the law, that it's undermining their lawsuits, that it's going to create constituencies that are going to lobby to preserve the law. Every health insurance exchange needs to be looked at as a taxpayer-funded pro-Obamacare lobbying group. That's what these folks are creating. And as more and more people around the country realize that's what's happening, more and more states are backing away from exchanges.
Well, that's what we're trying to do, is to encourage Oklahoma not to implement anything, even our own version. That's the music indicating the bottom of the first half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. We're going to ask you to stick around with our special guest, Michael F. Cannon. We'll be right back.
This is Bruce DeLay for Excel Firearms Training Center. You know, a life-threatening situation can occur without warning and force you to react quickly to protect yourself and your loved ones. How will you react in a stressful situation? Excel Firearms Training Center can provide you with the training you need to obtain your Arizona Concealed Carry Weapons Permit. Our four certified instructors have decades of professional firearm training experience, and they are fully licensed by the Arizona Department of Public Safety. Your course will begin with classroom training at our facility in Sierra Vista, followed by hands-on weapons training at our firing range near Tombstone. You'll get the 8 hours of concealed carry weapons training required before you can even apply for your concealed carry permit. To register for your class, contact Marty Hargraves at 678-0323. That's 678-0323. Or for just more information, call William Somadi at 458-8571. 458-8571. We'd like you to visit our website. That's superquality.com for all the dates and schedules of classes. Excel Firearms Training Center, preparing you for the unthinkable.
Do you need to promote your business on the internet? The Truth in Focus Radio Network reaches listeners locally in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and all across the United States. The shift is on from traditional media to internet marketing. Stay on the cutting edge with your business. Advertise with us today. Email radio at truthinfocus.org. You heard the word, so will they. Email us at radio at truthinfocus.org.
Go!
And welcome back to the second half of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. This is Amanda Teagarden in studio with James Parsons, and we continue our discussion with Michael F. Cannon, who is the Cato Institute's Director of Health Policy Studies. And we're going to pick up where we left off in the first half. And James, you wanted to ask a question about, as a follow-up to the four states that have refused to implement the exchanges.
Yeah, Michael, with those four states that have refused the money and implementing these exchanges, how have those states set themselves up in the future as far as this law is concerned, and in comparison to those states that are accepting this money and are implementing this?
I'm sorry, so what is going to happen in the future in those states?
Right. What exactly?
Well, what I would say is that those states are trying to shape the future. Those governors know that the law isn't going to work. They know that it's unconstitutional. They know that a majority of the American public wants to repeal it. And so they're doing what they need to do to make sure that happens. I mean, we've already got a national debt that's about, you know, for the next decade is going to be about 3/4 of the size of our economy. And to that, this law adds two new entitlements, expands a third entitlement program at a total price tag to the federal government of $1 trillion. That's $1 trillion of new debt. This is not what we should be doing. We can't afford this. So those governors, what they're trying to do is they are not just trying to improve health care by enacting health care reform. They're trying to stop something that is going to send not only our healthcare sector, but our economy on a downward path. So I think that that's the most important thing that governors and state legislatures can do, is voice their disapproval of this law by saying, hell no, we're not going to participate.
If the state creates their own version, quote-unquote, own version of an Oklahoma-based or state-based exchange based on free market principles, how can an exchange based on the definition that's out there, how can that be free market?
Well, you know, I love exchanges. I love voluntary exchanges. My idea of a health insurance exchange is I give a health insurance company money and they give me health insurance. That sounds like a great exchange to me. But as we discussed before, that's not what the Obamacare exchanges are. That's not what the supposedly non-Obamacare health insurance exchanges are. These are government bureaucracies that we're talking about. They're government bureaucracies that are going to monitor what you buy and what health insurance companies sell. And if they don't force you to buy a certain product and regulate the prices of that product and drive out economical and comprehensive plans from the marketplace before 2014, They will be doing that in 2014 when Obamacare takes full effect, if it takes full effect.
But
we can stop that from taking full effect if states say, no, we're not going to participate in this, because the federal government is not going to be able to implement these exchanges by itself. That's why they're seeding the states with all this money, trying to get the states to do this.
That's what we were trying to convey to the Oklahoma legislature, is that the money is for the states to work out all the kinks so it could be transferred to other states. There's interoperability agreement clauses in that state application that everything you do must meet what the Office of the National Coordinator dictates, and it must be transferable to all 50 other states plus U.S. territories. This is because this has never been done before. Somebody has to be the first ones to get the IT structure and everything, all these regulations changed, the modules put together to link all this stuff together. It has to be done. So it's a hollow threat. We've called that the boogeyman threat here in Oklahoma, when we're saying that the scenario is that if we don't do it, the federal government's going to come in and set up an exchange, and we don't want that. Our argument was they can't because it doesn't exist. So where is it stated?
Well, right, and that's an important point. One of the ways that the left, the people who like this law, have been able to frighten opponents of this law is of Obamacare, is by saying, well, if states don't set up a health insurance exchange, the federal government is going to come in and do that. You don't want the federal government coming in and setting up a health insurance exchange in your state, do you? It sounds kind of scary until you recognize that it doesn't really matter who sets up the exchange or who administers the exchange, because the rules will all be written in Washington by the federal government. So it's not that states are going to have any additional flexibility under this law. They're not going to be able to preserve health savings accounts, for example, because the rules that will eliminate health savings accounts will be written in Washington, D.C., and they're not going to be able to get waivers to those rules after 2014. So the choice is not between a state-run exchange and a federal-run exchange, so much as it is a choice between who's going to be at the wheel when this thing goes over a cliff. And if it's because it's the rules will be written in Washington, those rules will send this over a cliff. Do you really want, do you want your state officials, Mr. Insurance Commissioner, or you, Mr. Legislator, want to be blamed for the awful mess that this thing makes because you're the one running the exchange? The rules are going to be the same. You're going to get the same awful outcomes no matter who sets it up. But if the states say, no, we're not going to set it up, then number one, it sends a message that we don't like this law, the public has never liked this law, and it needs to be scrapped. And two, it'll prevent these exchanges from ever being set up, because the federal government just doesn't have the wherewithal to set up the exchanges in all of these states.
Where is it, or is it at all, in the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act in there that if states implement their own exchanges, that they will not be forced to adapt to the federal exchange? I couldn't find that language.
No, there's no such exemption in the law. And in fact, there are some who have said that if a state sets up its own exchange, then they'll have flexibility to be less regulatory than the federal government would. And that's simply not true. In letters to the governors, in a op-ed that she wrote in the Washington Post, Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius told governors that they will have flexibility under this law. They will have if they run their own exchanges, they will have the flexibility to make the exchanges even more regulatory than Obamacare requires. And they will have the flexibility to scrap the exchange entirely and replace it with a single-payer government-run system. That's the only flexibility states are going to have if they run their own exchanges. They're not going to be able to make it less regulatory. They're not going to be able to eliminate the mandates that are going to make health insurance more expensive. They're not going to be able to loosen the price controls that are driving comprehensive plans out of the market and will encourage insurance companies to mistreat sick people. They're not going to be able to stop those things from happening. So there's really no reason for a state to implement an exchange whatsoever.
in your estimation, the move in this country seems to be toward managed care and managed competition. These exchanges fit into that, don't they, that model?
Let's distinguish between two things. One is managed care. It's a type of health insurance plan where the insurance company does a more aggressive job of trying to avoid wasteful expenditures. A lot of people don't like managed care, but the people who get to choose their own health plans, because some people in this country do, it's not their employers who are choosing, they actually get to choose their own health plans. When people choose their own health plan, the ones that choose managed care like them. So there's really nothing wrong with managed care as long as people have a choice. Managed competition is something different. Managed competition is what we used to call these Obamacare exchanges, where the government forces people to buy a health insurance, tells them what to purchase, slaps price controls on that health insurance so that both the low cost and the comprehensive plans disappear, and then subsidizes the heck out of people so that they of insurance companies so that low-income people can get health insurance and comply with the mandate, too. That's managed competition. Obamacare is managed competition. Once, you know, it reached a national stage and once it got to the point where it looked like it was actually going to become law, well, you know, actually, I should say, the Clinton administration proposed managed competition as well, and the American public rejected it. This time, the American public rejected it, but they passed it anyway.
Right. On this particular issue here of what the ramifications are of this is that on the constitutionality of it, in November we had a very big ballot, long ballot in Oklahoma, many state elected officials, and 11 state questions. One of those state questions amended the Oklahoma Constitution to read that...
To block Obamacare.
To block. You could not compel somebody either directly or indirectly to participate in a health care system, to participate in a health care system. So that was our state question. And it passed overwhelmingly in this state. When people start getting notices from their insurance provider that their annual premium will total $23,000 or $24,000 a year, and then they are, aren't they, then indirectly compelled to participate in some sort of a state-regulated or state-sponsored insurance program in order to qualify for these tax credits, these subsidies. Isn't this indirect compulsion through the extreme rise in premiums? I'm quoting $23,000 because the gentleman actually had that as a document. It was sent to him. He went from $7,000 a year in 2010. His new premium for 2011 was $23,685 a year. So, indirect compulsion?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Are you asking if the cost of health insurance, if that rises rapidly, then would that
indirectly compel
by itself,
people?
Indirectly force someone to participate in a health insurance system?
Yes.
Just rising premiums by themselves?
Yes.
I wouldn't think so, because you would still have the choice of saying, no, I'm not going to buy health insurance. But what does directly compel people to purchase health insurance is Obamacare. And the so I think that what Oklahoma did by amending its constitution was incredibly important. I talk about this when I give speeches about Obamacare. This is how deep the public dislike for this law is. The two states actually amended their constitutions. Among all the other things that have been happening at the state level, states have been passing laws that block this. You have 28 states suing to overturn Obamacare. But two states actually amended their state constitutions to block this federal law. That didn't happen with Social Security. It didn't happen with Medicare and Medicaid, the other supposed pillars of the welfare state. It's happening with Obamacare. There's something different about this law. It is more sweeping. It is more oppressive, and the public has rejected it. And I think they're going to keep voicing their displeasure with this law until it's wiped from the books.
What we have here is this. You use the term Hobson's choice, I believe, in your article. That it's really no choice at all.
Yeah. That's the offer that Obamacare makes the states. I call it a veiled Hobson's choice. You know, it seems like you have a choice because you can either set up your own health insurance exchange, or the federal government can set it up for you. That's the veil, is this appearance of choice. But you peel back the veil, and it turns out there's only one choice, which is to have an Obamacare exchange, a new government bureaucracy implementing federal rules that are going to drive up the cost of health care, make it harder for sick people to get the... I'm sorry, drive up the cost of health insurance and make it harder for sick people to get the care they need.
Michael, are you familiar with the it's this thing from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation called the State Coverage Initiatives? And there's a white paper that they've done with a timeline for the implementation for state policymakers. And it's a very large, 11 by 17, what they call a Gantt timeline, color-coded with the years 2010, 11, 12, 13, and 14 across the top. And then actual benchmarks that the states are to achieve while they're implementing the health benefit exchanges. And their white paper is called Health Benefit Exchanges, an Implementation Timeline for State Policymakers. The reason I'm bringing this up, I went to a steering committee meeting, Health Insurance Exchange Steering Committee meeting, which they did not want the public to attend, but I was able to attend for a legislator to take notes. This was one of the handouts there. Our state is in the midst of implementing this Robert Wood Johnson initiative, or their state coverage initiative. This seems to be that two things are happening here. What the legislature is trying to do is implement legislation to further this timeline. The timeline is being followed by agencies outside of the legislature that we don't know about. Are you seeing this replicated throughout the states?
The Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is a wealthy left-wing foundation that is focused, I think, almost exclusively on health and healthcare issues. They support this law. They're doing any number of things to promote implementation, including hand out those timelines. So I haven't seen that timeline. I've seen similar timelines from other groups that favor this law, and that's where that's where the insurance commissioners and the insurance companies are finding a lot of support, is in on the part of the left wing ideologues who want to see this law implemented. So there's a lot of money not just from the insurance companies that's backing up this effort, and that should tell Republican conservative legislatures something, that you've got these left-wing groups out there that are encouraging them to do exactly what they're doing.
I'm going to send you that document so you'll have it to look at. And it's on the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation website. You have to do a little bit of digging, but there it is. But I can send you a link to it if you're interested. But that timeline was handed out. And we used the $1 million planning grant to hire two project managers. And these project managers are overseeing the implementation of the exchange and the IT infrastructure. And they've broken up into the stakeholder working groups, and those working groups are supposed to supply input into how they would like the exchange to work. It seems like the stakeholders are being, that's a facilitated meeting, and they'll help you come to the right conclusion. But this is the prototype that they're following. And I say that because our House Bill 2130 came right out of this document's recommendations. So I know for real.
I call these... you have to understand that these working groups are going to be populated with the people who want to see this law implemented. They're going to be a force that lobbies for this. They're going to be, in many cases, another pro-Obamacare, taxpayer-funded lobbying group. I like to call them bootleggers and Baptist coalitions. There's this theory of regulation called the bootleggers and Baptist theory of regulation that says that behind every successful government intervention into the economy, there are the true believers who believe in government, and there are also the people who profit from that government intervention in the economy. So if you think about blue laws that prohibit the selling of liquor on Sundays, who are the true believers in those laws? Well, they're Baptists who want to reduce alcohol consumption on the Lord's Day. But there are also people who profit from blue laws. They're the bootleggers who sell illegal alcohol on Sundays. They make a tidy profit, and they actually contribute to the campaigns of the politicians who support these laws because that keeps their, you know, their profitable business going. Well, you can see these bootleggers and Baptist coalitions everywhere in government, and here you see them in these working groups, these task forces that you talk about, where you have folks like the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, who are the Baptists who really believe in government-run health care, and you see the bootleggers like the insurance companies and others who expect to get protection from competition from the regulations in Obamacare, who expect to get hundreds of billions of dollars in government subsidies. So you put these people in a room together, you give them some taxpayer money, and you say, what should we do? Of course they're going to say, implement Obamacare on time. You are funding a lobbying group that is going to keep this law, that is going to argue for keeping this law alive.
Well, you probably wouldn't be surprised.
I don't think that the faith should be funding any of these groups, not a study group, not a planning commission, not a hub, not certainly not an exchange, nothing, because this is an illegitimate law that needs to be overturned or otherwise wiped from the books.
Probably wouldn't surprise you to know Blue Cross Blue Shield was in that stakeholder group, and in our state,
of course,
also,
not. They're salivating at the prospect of all the money that Obamacare makes available to them.
Yeah, we're going to solve that uninsured citizens crisis here because we need more people insured, covered with insured. By the way, there's a lot of arguments about really whether there's a crisis of the uninsured or not. We have people here who are actually in the insurance business and said if you take out all those who don't want insurance, the remaining pool, if you remove those who are actually eligible for either SoonerCare or Insure Oklahoma or Medicaid, the remaining pool is so small you don't need to take a $54 million grant to reach that audience of people. They just don't want insurance, and it's a small percentage of the entire Oklahoma population, which is probably pretty common across the United States. It's not a large population in the grand scheme of things.
Let me throw out two data points for you. One of them is that a couple of years ago, some health economists looked at the uninsured, looked at their incomes, even their health status, as far as that could be discerned. And they estimated that as many as 75% of the uninsured could afford health insurance if they wanted it. They just don't want it. 75%. And so we created this. So that's the first data point. The second data point is that there's a program that Obamacare created called the Pre-Existing Condition Insurance Plan Program. They're basically what are called high-risk pools that Obamacare set up in all the states to offer health insurance to people who found their premiums were too expensive. Because they're sick, they go to buy coverage, their premiums are so high they can't afford them. The official estimates were that these programs, these Obamacare high-risk pools, would enroll 375,000 people by the end of 2010. 375,000. That was the projection. The latest enrollment figure was 12,000. Less than 4% of the estimated need for this program. That's how many people enrolled. So you look at those two data points. 75% of the uninsured could afford health insurance if they wanted it. And when they created these high-risk pools, that are supposed to get it. Really, the main problem that Obamacare ostensibly exists to solve, the problem of people with expensive medical conditions who can't afford health insurance. Only 4% of the people they thought would show up actually did. That suggests that maybe we didn't need to create a $1 trillion law that conscripts 200,000 Americans into a compulsory health insurance scheme. Maybe we could have just done something much smaller to address the problem of pre-existing conditions.
If Obamacare is not defunded, if Michelle Bachmann and the other representatives are not successful in defunding Obama, and it's not repealed, what is the future for the United States financially?
Well, have you been to Greece lately?
I heard about it. I've been to the Caribbean.
When the debt to GDP ratio of a nation, that is the amount of money that its national government owes relative to the size of the economy. When that reaches around 80% is when you start to get in trouble. And the official estimates are that next year we'll hit 73, and we'll be up to 75, you know, five years out. President Obama just submitted a budget where the debt would rise even faster, by the way. So there's a real danger that we're going to face some sort of debt crisis. And if we do that, then the cost of financing the debt is going to go up. We're going to face an even starker choice of higher taxes or cuts in government spending. And if we increase taxes, we are going to be stifling the very sort of economic productivity, the very sort of economic activity that we need to feed people, to create jobs, to keep people in their houses, to pay off the debt that we've already racked up. Before Obamacare was passed, the Congressional Budget Office, those are Congress's nonpartisan budget number crunchers, they looked at all the existing commitments that we had made, that the federal government had made under Medicare, under Medicaid, under Social Security, and they said, all right, if we paid for all the existing commitments to, you know, when the baby boomers retire and all that, if we paid for all of that just by increasing tax rates, what would happen? And it turns out that by 2040, and we're talking about my son's peak earning years, by 2040 or so, tax rates would have to be double what they are right now. We're talking European-style tax rates. Those tax rates like that are going to choke off economic activity. They're going to eliminate jobs. They're going to leave us poorer as a nation. So you can't tax your way out of this problem. We have to reduce government spending. The first way we should reduce government spending is eliminating the two new entitlement programs that Obamacare creates and eliminating the expansion of the Medicaid program that it mandates, that states impose.
Wouldn't it help if states would quit taking grant money to implement things the federal government has designed?
Absolutely. Every penny helps. And even though these are grants that are only in the tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, which seems like not a lot when you've got a national debt that's in tens of trillions, it matters. Because if they refuse those grants, then maybe we'll be able to say no to the really big stuff, like Obamacare's entitlement spending.
Hey, Michael.
That's $1 trillion or more right there.
Michael, we got less than 2 minutes. Can you give me the Cato Institute's position on how the free market can solve all this problem, all this problem?
Well, I don't know any advocate of free markets who says that they can solve all problems. They just do a better job than any other approach of solving human problems, because free markets tap the ingenuity, the creativity of every man, woman, and sometimes child in an economy in a way that government-centered solutions just can't. They give them the freedom and the incentive to solve other people's problems, and so people do that, and in ways that we never would have imagined. So that's the sort of ingenuity, and we see it all around us. I'm holding a phone in my hand that when the writers for Star Trek were trying to come up with the comlinks that Captain Kirk used, they could never have envisioned what we could do with an iPhone right now. And so that's the sort of ingenuity and creativity that we need to see brought to bear in healthcare as well as every other sector of the economy, so that we can create more jobs, we can make ourselves a wealthier nation, we can lift more people out of poverty, and we can enrich people's lives. This is what free markets do. This is what we're missing out on by handing our healthcare sector and other sectors of the economy over to the federal government.
Well, that's the music indicating the end of this hour of America in the Balance on Truth in Focus Internet Radio. That kind of caught me off guard there for a minute. Our special guest today is Michael F. Cannon, who's just done an outstanding job detailing what is wrong with Obamacare and why the states should not be working to implement it. Michael, we thank you very much for your time, and we will be linking to your articles and other things in the future. We'd like to end by saying thank you for listening, and may God bless.